Welcome to today's Business Spotlight featuring Logistics Plus. Today, we're excited to have Danny Yunus, Vice President of Mission Critical Operations and Strategy for Logistics Plus, back with us. Danny, it's a pleasure to have you on Business Spotlight again.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me, Joe.
Danny, we have so much to talk about, so I'm going to go ahead and jump right in. Could you start by telling us what your role as Vice President of Mission Critical Operations and Strategy for LP entails? And can you share a little bit about your background and your journey with Logistics Plus?
Yeah, sure. Let's see. So VP of Mission Critical, I'll be the first to tell you that Mission Critical is an industry-specific term. It's not something that you might have heard of unless you're in this space, but it really pertains mostly to data centers. And that's a space that Logistics Plus has been involved with for probably the last 6 or 7 years, but really ramping up in the last 4 years with respect to what's called hyperscale data centers. So these are the very, very large facilities like what, you know, Google and Meta and X, formerly Twitter, and Amazon run. They call them hyperscale data centers because they're generally about 100 megawatts of power consumption, which, to give you an idea, is about the same amount of power as 30,000 homes. So these are massive standalone facilities that are engineered for continuous operation and a lot of redundancy to ensure that that continuous operation sustains. And as you could expect, these facilities require heavy engineering, a lot of materials, a lot of very specialized materials, and it's a complex supply chain both to construct these buildings, but also to sustain them. And because they're so complex and the supply chains can be so long, that's an area where Logistics Plus has found a niche to really help support the different players that are involved in that space. Not only the owners, like your Googles and Amazons, but also the general contractors, which we call GCs, who are tasked with deploying the sites, constructing them as, you know, basically project managers. Also the distributors that they work with to obtain their supplies, and then upstream in the supply chain, the OEMs and manufacturers that they work with to get the materials. Lots of planning that goes into these projects. We generally start with demand planning and figuring out how much stuff is going to be needed. And then you'll translate that up to capacity planning and who you're going to buy the stuff from and how much and when, and then coordinate all of the moves in between, including any warehousing and buffering that might be required. And oftentimes you'll even find that there's local warehouses that need to be established close to these construction sites. So it's really, really an end-to-end complex supply chain that needs to get built in a niche kind of space. And we love those kinds of problems. So this is a good space for us to be in. Now, how did I get here is a five-year conversation. I joined LP about, 6.5 years ago, coming off of a startup that I was running. Logistics Plus was one of my customers. It was a technology startup in the supply chain space. And the startup, when we were coming to an end of that journey, Logistics Plus said, Danny, why don't you stick around? You like working on fun, weird stuff. We don't know what you're going to be doing here, but we'd love to have you part of the team. Get a paddle and start rowing. And it's been a journey. So I'm having a lot of fun and we're working on really cool stuff.
Danny, I've been looking forward to this conversation and you just reminded me of the reasons why. So let's jump right in once again and do a deeper dive. You were a guest on this program once again back in 2018 and again in 2020, but we haven't spoken since then. Can you fill us in on what you've been up to over the past few years, especially more on that Google project?
Yeah, absolutely. So Google's one of our biggest clients. We have, you know, a dedicated team that helps support their supply chain globally. And it was tangentially related to that project, which had been ongoing for a long time. But through word of mouth, another group within Google had heard about Logistics Plus and the fun stuff that we like to work on. And they reached out to us to see if we'd like to help them out with an experiment. They had a hypothesis to test related to their construction of data centers. And they're building, you know, a lot of data centers to support things like Gemini and YouTube and Google Cloud and Gmail and all that stuff. And we looked at the problem they're trying to solve and agreed that it was the right problem to try to solve and an innovative way to try to attack it. So Google hired me and a dedicated team of about 10 people to support them and help manage supply chain and delivery model for these construction sites. I'll be honest, I didn't have much of a background in construction. I know supply chain and logistics pretty decently, but this was a brand new language to learn, new stakeholders to get familiar with, new types of, you know, organizations and different incentives and commercial arrangements that they have. And there was a little bit of a learning curve there for me and for the team. But what was important was that we bring a startup mentality and a supply chain systems mentality, systems thinking to this problem. And that was about 4 years ago that we got involved with that project. So I think that's why you haven't heard from me, is I've been fully dedicated to this project for the last few years. And it's been cool. I will say I can't really divulge details about the hypothesis we were trying to explore or how things have been going, but we're now in second iteration of it. It's been successful in many ways. And we continue to evolve the program and push it further, push the thinking further. What's really cool, though, is being able to work with Google and being surrounded by some of the best minds in the industry with respect to complex construction projects and limited materials and delivery models to try to support that. So taking a lot of the learnings from that experience over the last 4 years and now broadening our horizons a little bit and thinking about what's next and what else we can do. That program and the team is now pretty well stabilized. So we continue to support Google with this data center construction program. And now I'm able to kind of start to step back a little bit and let that team continue to run operations and figure out what's next.
Dan, it sounds like some of your special project work, as you just discussed, is wrapping up. What exciting new initiatives or priorities are you focusing on now?
Yeah, as I said, like taking a lot of the key learnings that we've captured from just being involved with, you know, high complexity construction projects. These are multi-year projects with, you know, a lot of engineering requirements and different types of materials and strained materials with long lead times, with a lot of competition to get them. And taking those learnings and the relationships that we've built and figuring out how can we share some of the best practices and figure out how to solve similar types of problems with other clients as well. So I think a lot of the things that we're trying to do is, you know, approach some of the general contractors and the manufacturers and OEMs and see what we can do to help them achieve their goals to produce these types of facilities faster, cheaper, and with higher quality and better uptime. And I think that, you know, a lot of this requires the know-how of like what kinds of materials and what are the constraints for those materials, but also the relationships with the specific OEMs that actually make this stuff. It's a space that's, I like to say, the fast moving water. You know, we're not going to see a decrease in the amount of data centers that are going to be needed in the next 20 years. There's just so much information that's being generated on a daily basis that you have to have more and more places to store this information and retrieve it. But of course, now what we're seeing too is with generative AI like ChatGPT and Gemini and other GPT generative AI models, there's a huge demand for a different type of data center that can do what's called inferencing, which is when you ask a question to, you know, ChatGPT, it has to come up with an answer and respond back to you. That takes more power, a different type of data center setup, different cooling equipment within the data center. So there's variations. You know, a DC isn't just a DC. There's different types that are being constructed to solve different types of problems. And so we think that there's a lot that we can do to kind of tap in and build on our experience that we've gained over the last 4 years and help other organizations to, you know, achieve their goals, whatever they might be.
Danny, we know Logistics Plus has made significant strides in data center solutions. Could you elaborate on why this vertical is so important and how LP is delivering value in this space?
Yeah, absolutely. Piggybacking on what I was just talking about, data center space is not going away anytime soon. We know what the pipeline of new site builds looks like for most of the major public companies. There's a lot of data centers that are being constructed in North America alone. There's another side to this equation too, which is the power generation side. And if you think about moving electricity into a building, all the transformers, the types of cable, medium voltage, high voltage, the substations, power inverters, backup generators, things that are required to enable the data center to run, all of that stuff is similarly needed for power distribution and power generation. And what you're seeing now is a lot of small modular reactors, new types of nuclear facilities that are going to replace a lot of the coal and gas-fired power plants in, you know, the next 20-year time horizon. This is a really exciting space to be in right now. And a lot of those power generation projects look and feel very similar to the data center projects. They're multi-year projects that require a lot of equipment that typically has long lead time. It can be hard to come by. It has to be engineered specifically for the job site at hand. There's a ton of permitting and certificates and like seismic studies and snow load and wind load studies. All of this has implications into what types of materials you're using and how you get them to the sites. And what Logistics Plus is really good at is helping to coordinate and lubricate these types of interactions between the engineers, the owners, the contractors, the OEMs, and then transporting and warehousing the materials and even installing them as needed on different sites. So we're kind of seeing ourselves as like a type of glue that can help connect all the different parties that are involved in these types of projects. And that's oftentimes one of the places where the hiccups happen is the transportation and moving the materials so that they're just at the right time arriving at the job site so that you don't hold up a crew of people who are waiting to do their job. That gets really expensive really quickly. So a lot of what we're doing to support complex construction sites has to do with, you know, the transactional stuff that's our basic blocking and tackling of logistics. It's, you know, having a crane arrive at the right time to unload an overdimensional, overweight piece of equipment off of a trailer at just the right time so that the job site crew can start to integrate it and assemble it on site. And that's right up our wheelhouse. That's in our DNA. We're really good at that stuff. And I think the secret's getting out and more of our customers are starting to lean on us to help execute that kind of stuff.
Danny, I believe another related area is the growing cryptocurrency logistics segment. We touched on this recently with Jason Burnick. What developments are you leading in this emerging and fascinating field?
Cryptocurrency is cool. It's similar to the hyperscale data centers in that it's basically a data center. You've got a whole bunch of computers that are designed to do one thing and one thing only. It's called an ASIC, an application-specific integrated chip. And these computers will mine Bitcoin or Ethereum or Dogecoin. They only do one thing and they do it really well. And they take a lot of electricity and they generate a lot of heat. Same problems that, you know, hyperscale data centers like Amazon or Google have. But what's different is that the crypto miners, they can oftentimes be more like duct tape and bubblegum. Like they'll just sort of throw all the equipment together that's needed so that they can very quickly start to capitalize and mine different cryptocurrencies. So they're a little bit more Wild West. They're a little bit more startup mentality, but they require similar types of equipment, transformers, medium voltage cable, those types of, you know, enabling equipment, and then fans and cooling infrastructure to make sure that things aren't overheated and they're used efficiently. But what's interesting about crypto is that the miners themselves will automatically turn on and off the machines depending on unit economics. And what I mean by that is they're really focused on having access to cheap electricity, and they'll turn on their crypto miner computers when the cost of electricity is low and when the price of Bitcoin is high, for example. If there's an inversion and the cost of electricity goes up and the price of Bitcoin goes down, you turn off all the computers. So they don't necessarily need to run 24/7, but they need to run when the getting's good, if that makes any sense. And what's happened over the last few years is you had a lot of crypto miners who would stand up these sites that could, you know, they were strategically located where there was access to cheap electricity and high-speed fiber cable on site and not too much enabling equipment, no substations needed from the utility company. They would stand up these sites and spend money on infrastructure and turn them on. But what we're seeing now is there's just not a lot of electricity that's available at any place in time in the 30 to 40 to 50 megawatt realm. Instead, there's a lot of fragmented places. Think of companies like Wabtec or Berry Global. They're factories, and they might have a contract with Penelec, for example, to have up to 15 megawatts of power to run their assembly lines or manufacturing plant. But those factories don't always use all of that dedicated power. Guys go on break, people take vacations, they shut down the factory at night or on weekends. And on those downtimes, there's an opportunity for crypto miners to put on what's called a small modular data center on the property. It could be 1 or 2 megawatts. It comes in a 40-foot shipping container. And we're seeing some opportunities where we know a whole bunch of factories because we're Logistics Plus and we've worked with them for the last 30 years. And there are times where it might make sense for them to actually get a tenant who's a data center operator or a crypto miner and stand up one of these small modular data centers on their property and just collect money. What they're doing is basically subletting out the space and the rights to their electricity and high-speed fiber internet connection to a crypto miner. And in return, they get paid every month. And they can be very lucrative deals for capturing small amounts of power in a distributed type of environment. So maybe 1 megawatt here, 2 megawatts there, 3 megawatts here. But over time, you get 10 megawatts of crypto mining capability, which is potentially a lot of money, especially with Bitcoin up around $100,000 right now. So that's a space where LP is starting to connect dots in kind of a two-sided marketplace. And then also, of course, we can support with transportation, installation, post-install maintenance, hot swaps, it's called, where you got to move in and move out different computers as they fail because they run these things pretty hard. And that's kind of another thing that I'll just comment on quickly. In the old days, data centers, even the hyperscale ones, would be designed for a certain, you know, like 5-10 year horizon. But the speed at which the equipment inside those data centers is improving, it's not a 5 or 10 year time horizon. You've got GPUs that come out every year that are way better than last year's model. And so what you need to do is swap out all the equipment that's inside the data center, the computer equipment itself, and moving all that equipment in and out on an annual or even semi-annually basis, it's a lot of work. And it looks more and more like traditional warehousing, where you've got truckloads coming in, it needs to be received, scanned in, swapped out, and then all the old stuff is sent outbound for refurbish or recycling or reclamation. But now, I mean, there's implications to the design of the data center itself. Old data centers would have one loading dock because once they're constructed, they thought, wow, that's it, it's done. But now you need to have 3, 4, 5 loading docks and a warehouse attached to it so that you can move all these materials in and out on an ongoing basis. That changes the whole discussion about how to engineer and design and architect a data center. What should it look like? I think that in the future, we'll see they look more and more like e-commerce warehouses with maybe 30 dock doors. It's possible, maybe not, maybe that's overkill, but we'll see.
We're speaking with Danny Yunus, Vice President of Mission Critical Operations and Strategy for Logistics Plus. Danny, another area of growth for LP is its warehousing and pick, pack, and ship e-commerce operations, as you know. Are you still involved in this segment? And are there any updates or success stories you might be able to share with us?
Yeah, I am. We're having fun with that as well. One of the really cool things that we got into about 4 years ago is a niche space for cyber charter schools in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. We actually onboarded a client about 4 years ago. It's called Reach Academy, and they're a cyber charter school in Pennsylvania. And they had some problems with their existing supplier that would send out the kits of materials to their students when students would sign up for their school. The problems they were encountering was, you know, pricing opacity. It was not really clear like what they were paying for or how much the materials would cost. They didn't get much opportunity to customize the kits or make changes late in the game. And they also needed more flexibility and better customer service. And so we proposed that, you know, we're actually really good at that stuff and we'll specifically design a program just for them. And what we do at a high level for Reach is when they have students sign up, there's kits like STEM kits, science, technology, engineering, math, picture, litmus paper, magnets, ping pong balls, scales, anything that that student would need for eighth grade or junior year of high school or third grade. There's different kit versions for each class and for each curriculum type. And what we do is we buy all the materials ahead of time on behalf of the school. Then we pre-create all the kits. It's like 30,000 kits that we're making ahead of time. We do this in a batch production methodology. So it's pretty efficient. We run an assembly line where we pre-create thousands of kits at a time. And then right around end of summer, we get an order file where we print out thousands of shipping labels and we send out the right kit type to the right student just before class starts. And there's a lot of times where we have to do last minute swaps where instead of this type of battery, we want that type of battery, for example. It's a really cool customized program. And what's great is because this is cyber charter, the tax dollars that go into funding those programs stays in the Commonwealth of PA. It stays right here in Erie, and it helps us build up our warehousing capabilities and employ people right in our hometown, which is great. We've been recommended by that client to another cyber school in Pennsylvania. We're onboarding them right now. We'll be doing operations for them in 2025, which we're really excited about. And I think there's a good opportunity to expand this to the other cyber charter schools within Pennsylvania and hopefully beyond.
Danny, our time is rapidly coming to a close, believe it or not, but I have to get in this question. As someone with a strong tech background, how do you see technology evolving at Logistics Plus and shaping the logistics industry overall?
A couple of things. So everyone was really excited about AI and, you know, generative AI and how it was going to upend the supply chain industry. And I think there's a lot of cool applications that can be built, tools that can be built around generative AI. Imagine chatbots that help, you know, facilitate specific workflows and things like that, where you can assist operations people who are on the front lines doing the job. One of the, I think, more provocative things, though, is actually the ability for generative AI to help engineers write code. We currently use Microsoft Copilot to do that. There's other programs like Claude is one of the generative AI programs that's really good for code generation. And it makes it so much easier for an engineer to get creative and bring their dreams to reality without having to rely on, you know, other stakeholders or larger teams to co-develop code or taking weeks or months to try to bring a vision to reality. A friend of mine, he used to have 30 engineers working for him in our startup. He has zero engineers now. He is a GPT prompter. He's a generative AI prompter. He'll ask questions to Claude and get back lines and lines of code that as an architect, he can then scan through the lines of code, quickly deploy it, test it, and brings his applications to life in a matter of hours. This is really exciting. It's going to enable a lot of creativity in what the engineers would typically have to rely on writing things out by hand. Now they can do things really fast. I think that's going to, you won't see it directly. You'll see it indirectly by the types of tools that you see and the cool innovative solutions that come out as a result.
Dan, if our listeners of Business Spotlight want to learn more about Logistics Plus and the solutions we discussed today, where can they go for more information?
If it's specific to data centers or power generation, things like that, they can reach out to our mission critical group. That'll hit a group of our subject matter experts that are involved with this. I think it's missioncritical@logisticsplus.com. Or, you know, feel free to just hit up our inbound marketing website on logisticsplus.com and it'll make its way to me.
Danny, before we depart, anything else you'd like to add?
No, I think that's it. We're doing cool stuff. We're moving fast, solving fun problems, and making Erie amazing.
Danny, I'll tell you what, it's always fun and it's always educational. Thanks for today. That wraps up this edition of the Money Radio WPSE Business Spotlight presented by Logistics Plus. A big thank you to our guest, Danny Yunus, Vice President of Mission Critical Operations and Strategy at Logistics Plus. Be sure to tune in next week at the same time for another deep dive into the businesses shaping our community.
Thanks for listening to Business Spotlight on Money Radio WPSE. You can access today's program or other episodes of Business Spotlight by clicking on the podcast tab on our homepage. Join us again next week as UPMC Hammett is in the Business Spotlight.